Mark My Words shares Mark Homer's contrarian views on investing, business, finance, economics, and all things money. Mark interviews the world's most successful business, finance, and money experts, as well as imparting his knowledge in a factual, direct, and no-nonsense manner. Welcome to Mark My Words, and here is your host, Mark Homer.
Do you think it's a bit mad when you like look at this building like
yeah,
2 years ago and then
make
like
sure you get carways
of
all that from
oh yeah, we'll get it all.
Yeah, you remember it.
I was on site for 2 years filming it on.
Yeah,
it's just mad. It's like
it was nuts, wasn't it?
Tenants everywhere now. It's
I mean,
it's a real thing.
There was when you came on these floors weren't there. Where you saw it from the beginning.
Yeah, very start. Yeah.
Did you see it before we even started?
Yeah, when it was just the M&S building and it was just empty concrete everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nuts, isn't it?
We ready, Zane?
Yeah.
Okay. So this recession seems different from 08. Would you agree or disagree?
This recession is very different from 08. I don't think it's as deep. You know, the banks are still, you know, to a large extent, they're still lending. It's a different issue. There's different ingredients, so a different cake gets baked. You know, this time it's been an issue of, they thought, consumer spending falling off a cliff because energy prices go up and a lot of the consumer durables and food goes up so much. But I think what's probably happened is people have still got reserves because they were given so much cash during the pandemic. So consumer spending hasn't fallen off a cliff in the way that we thought it was going to. Travel is still booming. Still loads of people are still traveling, clearly because they couldn't. But you know, people need cash to do that. And so I think it's an indicator that there's probably more cash around than we thought maybe there was going to be. Unemployment is still very, very low, probably because a lot of people have been taken out of the employment market. So of course, if you take 1.2 million people out of the people who are looking for work, then the number of unemployed goes down hugely. But you know, that's a sort of statistic which keeps wages growing. You know, wage growth, which is obviously generally a good thing as long as it doesn't feed too much into inflation, which it is at the moment because it's so high, you know, carries on and the, you know, the recession is not as sharp as maybe you would imagine. Interest rates have gone from 0.5% to 3.5%. I thought that would have a bigger effect, but I don't know, the market seems to be wearing it. Which means they're probably going to have to go higher because, yes, inflation will start falling, but it'll probably sit around 4 or 5%. And it may just get stuck there, so they're going to have to push interest rates up even more to get it down to 2% again. You know, 08 was so different because there were more bankruptcies, there were more companies going bust, because they were running out of money, they couldn't get liquidity from banks. People were, you know, the wholesale lending market seized up in 08. So banks couldn't, you know, the banks that were getting their money from the markets to lend out rather than their depositors got into real trouble. So we haven't got those issues. They're very, very different issues. But Rob's point about the tail end effects of this, I think, are very true.
I think it's going to be a lot longer.
Gone a long time.
I think there could be a decade of, at least, of implication of things like Brexit and lockdown. And you know, think of the cost of the vaccines, the lockdown, the furlough, the track and tracer, the debt repayment, all of these things. I think it could go on and on and on. And all of these things, like furlough, etc., that are paid to support, they cost so much money, and in the end they kick the can down the road of what the issue is. So my view is a bit more bearish. I think there could be many years of
anemic growth. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Just stagnation.
Yeah.
Just slightly, just bumbling, bouncing, you know, bouncing on the bottom. I think that's what's like to happen. I mean, all the overhang of the lockdowns, you know, look at the NHS, which is just sucks more. It doesn't matter what you throw at it, it's not got enough money. It just sucks more and more money. And,
it's like,
you know,
our Lamborghini Aventador, it's a money pit.
You know, it doesn't matter what they throw at the NHS, it spends more and more. And yes, all right, you know, we've got the sort of, if you think of the bell curve, you know, you've got a huge load of people born after the Second World War. You can understand why. Now they're getting old, they're out of the employment market, they're drawing pensions, they're using the NHS. So some of this is that the baby boomers are now getting old, you know, and there's probably less younger people proportionally to support, you know, all of those. Whereas when those guys were working, clearly there were less older people in proportion to people of a working age. So there is that, you know, as part of all this, and we shouldn't forget that. But I think that, you know, the NHS is partially in such a state because of all the lockdowns and all the mess that caused. You know, if you look at the sort of excess death rate now, it's actually worse than it was in the pandemic. So what is the effect of, what has been the effect of all these lockdowns in terms of, you know, increased instances of cancer now because it wasn't treated during the lockdowns. You know, all of those extra people who have, suicides depression. Have gone up, all of those people who are, you know, got other ailments, other issues, apparently a huge number of these 1.2 million people who are not working now, a massive number are on incapacity benefit or some sort of benefit because they're sick, long COVID or whatever it is, because the NHS didn't treat them at the time. I suspect partially because of lockdown. You've got so many effects of lockdown. That's just the NHS. Then there was all the furlough. Then there was all this, you know, other sort of government spending that $500 billion he sprayed all over the place. I mean, you know, part of it was Boris and Rishi.
That's one sixth of all the debt.
I mean, yeah, all just during that pandemic. Boris just opening his pockets and just spraying everywhere like he does in his personal life. You know, he's part of the, him and Rishi were a big part of the problem.
And what was the reward for Rishi for all this? Oh, Prime Minister. Can you still read your screen?
I can see you'll read it perfectly clear. Right, it's interesting what you said, Rob, before about we could be moving into a lost decade. I think the last lost decade we had was in the 1970s. Do you think that this could be even worse or the same as that?
Well, I think that I can't predict the future. And what you have with economies and governments and banks and central governance is they can react. So something can happen and they can stop it by tweaking printing of money up or controlling interest rates and inflation or furloughs. So we think we know what's going to happen based on where we're at today, but we don't know how then the government and the central governance will react to protect. So I can't say for sure there's going to be a massive depression and a lost decade. I just think that the implications of lockdowns and vaccines, billions, trillions spent, it's all got to come from somewhere, and it's going to be tax, tax, tax. And the more tax you have, the less money you have. And the more inflation there is, the less money you have. And the more debt there is, the less money you have. And I think that's all going to feed out. It's also going to create opportunity, Harry. And that's what entrepreneurs do. They find the opportunity.
Love it. We're good. You can just keep wiping the lens if it's in the way.
It doesn't seem to have affected the image yet.
Okay, that's good. I can see it's passing because the cloud is blue now, so it's crashing. Right, okay.
As long as your cameras don't get fucked.
Right. It should be weatherproof.
Yeah. Should be. It's famous last words.
Google right. Says they are.
So you think like the majority of people walking around the street, the high street just now, do you think they even know or care that we're in a recession and how it's going to affect them?
I don't even think they know what it means. Like the technical definition of a recession, what is it, 2 negative quarters of growth?
Well, but, contraction.
Okay, so, but you know, you could have one negative contraction of 0.1 and then one positive of plus 0.5. Actually, what does it really mean?
Means that the economy is getting smaller for 6 months. If you take it over a 2-3 month periods, the economy gets smaller in both of those 3 month periods.
And you speak consecutive. It could get
smaller
in one
quarter.
1-3 months where it could get a lot smaller.
Yeah.
Or you could have 6-3 months in a row where it can get a little bit smaller and then one massive quarter of growth. I think what the people on the street notice is what their food costs. I think they notice what the interest rates are and the repayments on their mortgages are and what their rents are. I think these are the things that people notice. I don't think they really understand how the money system works, which, you know, I've been trying to teach people. I'm actually not a major critic of how the money system works because it's benefited me a lot. all this money that's got printed out of nothing that's imaginary has helped me buy a load of these properties. So I like to think I'm relatively balanced. I just want to educate as many people as possible to know what the money system is really like, so you can leverage it to your advantage. You know, oh, come and save your money with us. We're Barclays or any other bank. Look, we've just done a refurb. It looks beautiful. Come in and get some advice from us. And hey, I'm 17 and I'm working on the desk, but I can advise you about your money. You should invest it into this thing that we control. And they don't get. Mark and I wrote a book together, which is his book, but I helped him write, and it's called Low Cost High Life. And one of the things we said in this book is become your own independent financial advisor. Know how to invest your own money. Manage and master your own money. Don't rely on someone who works in a bank behind a desk who's not really qualified, or an IFA who's got an ulterior motive for recommending certain investments. Do it yourself. You take responsibility for your health. You should take responsibility for your wealth.
Andrew Tate says, don't work or start in a business you're passionate about. Is he right or wrong?
Don't work in a business you're passionate about.
Don't start a business you're passionate about.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I think you need to find something fundamentally that is profitable, makes money, and has a good runway so that it's going to be profitable into the future. But I think if you are passionate and you are really, really excited about that thing, I think you're going to put so much more into it to become the best at it and to generate, you know, to make it the best business. So, you know, I think I disagree with that statement. Yeah.
I think I see where he's coming from, because I think passion is overrated. I think it's good to be interested in something. But many people are passionate about stuff that's never going to make any money. I'm passionate about Lego.
Yeah.
I love building Lego. I'm never going to make any money out of that. Mark's passionate about cars. I'm not sure he can monetize that.
I can't.
So
it's all about how much less you lose.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the game with that.
So yeah. I think, notice what Mark said as well. He doesn't agree with it, but it's got to be profitable. So would I rather it's profitable but not a passion, or a passion and it makes no money? I'd go for profitable. I just think the passion and emotion are a little bit overrated. In business, I love property, but I love business in general more. I could probably run a business on just about anything if it served people and made good money. But, you know, the thing that I love the most to do in life, well, you know, maybe I can't make money out of that.
Mark, how do you make every pound a prisoner?
Yeah, this is back to low-cost high life, isn't it? So, champagne lifestyle, lemonade wages. I think it's just about being, you know, getting all your non-perishable consumables in your house, buying 2 years' worth of, you know, in January and in the sale in Tesco, and, you know, saving money on insurance. It's just generally being very careful about your pound, coming from Yorkshire. And not that I'm from Yorkshire, but I understand they know a thing or two about that. So, it's about managing your money, isn't it? And reducing your expenditure while still living a fruitful lifestyle.
Mark, can you sometimes spend about 5 hours to save £5?
I can, but I do try and focus. Certainly, I love points and Avios and, you know, frequent flyer miles and stuff like that. And I do try and always focus on the big wins, you know. So
don't get to diminishing law of time.
Yeah, because, your time's worth more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so Mark, I recently renewed my car insurance. Yeah. This is something I do every single January of playing that game. Yeah. And kind of taking your advice on, I want to see how you feel about me doing this. So I was quoted for all my cars, so I've got 4 cars, to have, I think, car insurance of just over £1,000.
Yeah.
Doing all the things I've learned from you, calling up companies, haggling, getting everything done. I got everything all insured for less than £400.
Did you?
Wow. Yeah.
Nice.
So again, it's putting in the many hours.
It's worth it. £600 is worth it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mark,
did
you once get me insured, I think, on our Ferrari, and the quote was like £5,000 and you got them for £500 or something?
Yeah, so I think it was something like that. Yeah, yeah.
And how do you do something like that?
Well, I suppose the starting point is, if you go on Confused, you go on Compare the Market, and you go on Money Supermarket, if you go on the three, Martin Lewis has actually got an aggregator, I think, which does all three. But if you do all three, and I think Go Compare, I don't know if I said that one, if you put it into all those four, you're probably going to get near where you need to be. Then you find the cheapest or the one that works the best. Usually wang the excess up a bit because, you know, you don't want to really be claiming if it's sort of less than a couple of grand usually. And then ring them up and haggle further. Just sort of tell them you've got another quote, pull them down a little bit. What is interesting though now, it's also about finding the right insurer for the right thing. It's taken me a number of years, but on our classic stuff, if you can say that the car is garaged almost all the time, you can insure those so cheap if you go to a...
Same, I've been getting that.
Yeah, if you go to a specialist classic insurer. Our Ferrari is insured for £295 for the year, which is like...
We've got a 911 930 turbo coming in about an hour and a half.
Well, we'll see what that is, but I suspect it's not going to... I mean, that's a 100 grand Ferrari. I suspect this Porsche probably won't be that different. You know, and that's a sort of specialist insurer, and it took me a number of years. That's Carol Nash. I sort of found that. You know, and then we've got an Ariel Atom. Same thing. I'd never use Confused and all that lot for that. But, you know, if you just take that to the three, you've got to put a bit of time in. But, you know, you take that to Adrian Flux, and I think, what is it, Reese Motorsport we go to. And then there's one other. I think it was A-Plan. You go to those three, you put the time in. Now, what's really interesting is... And this is really weird. The FCA has told the insurers that they're not allowed to charge new customers less than the existing customers, which is, of course, how the old industry is being constructed. Every year, you're shopping around because they put you up and it's cheaper to go somewhere else. Well, now we're getting insurance renewals through and they're the same as last year. And I'm like, oh my God. And you ring others and they're more. So... Once you find the right one, actually, I suspect you're going to be sticky for a lot more years now.
Yeah.
It takes a lot less work. I'm quite liking it because you haven't got to put a lot of work in initially to find the right home for it, someone who really understands the risk. I used to, you know, when I started driving, this is where this all came from. When I was 17, all my mates and I, we all wanted cars. So, you know, whether it was, you know, Renault 5 GT Turbo, which you could never get insured on as a 17-year-old, or, you know, maybe, a Fiesta XR2i, or maybe, all this sort of, ended up getting a Punto GT Turbo, you know, all this stuff that as a 17, 18-year-old, you'd never get insured on. I used to think to myself, how can I get insured? You know, how can I get that car? Because I know I can go and buy it, but the issue is getting insurance. I sort of put my mind to it, and I thought, if I ring 40 insurers, I bet I can get insured. And that's what I used to do. And I just used to spend 2 days ringing them all, and I just blurted it all out whilst doing something else. Because you just have to repeat it every single, how many years you've been driving, you know, what kind of car, what's the CC, you know, how many crashes have you had, have you got any point? And you just bleat, and I did it 40 times, and I did it, and I used to find I could find insurance for, you know, stuff I really wanted to drive, and of course none of my mates had put that work in, so I get the car and they wouldn't, and so that taught me how the insurance system works. Do you know what I mean? What makes a difference and what doesn't, you know, when you're giving information to them. But of course now it is a lot easier. I always feel it's, you know, it's a bit of a I feel like it's a bit of a pleasure because I can just put it into this stuff online and just three websites, it's saved all your details. All right, probably takes an hour and a half, but hour and a half to insure four cars every year, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It really is.
Can I just ask Mark a question?
Yeah.
Mark, would you get more pleasure in saving £1 or making £2?
Well, the thing with making £2 is you probably lose 60 to 70% of it in tax. So saving £1 is actually more profitable for your asset base than making £1 often. So you have to think about that as well.
Just following on from that insurance. Yeah. So one of my vehicles, I've got a 1991 Kawasaki Zephyr. It was a few hundred pounds to insure it last year. And I got it insured this year for less than £100. Moving it to a classic insurance, garaging it.
Yeah.
And even though I had a really bad accident last year, you know, that on my record, good. Just because shopping around, doing the work, doing the deals, putting in just a few hours work saves thousands.
Your return on investment from doing that is massive, and it's 100% return. There's no tax on it.
Yep.
So it's a very good use of time.
The money I saved, put it in my asset.
And Exactly. Mm. When you say put it in the ISA,
which is now capped.
And, well, it's not. No. I'm not sure they're doing it.
No, so I'm just playing.
You should still do it. It's still a good thing.
I do still do it. Yeah, I do. But I'm well over that limit already. Yeah. So.
But it won't just be this year. You'll say that because you found that good home for that with that classic insurance.
Yeah, just keep going.
You'll probably get 10 years worth of value out of that. Mm. And think what you're going to save over 10 years, and it goes in your ISA and get. It's massive return on investment. It's really worth it.
Okay. Selfish question for me, learning about how to invest. So if you were me, what is the best investments to make? A little bit of context. So I've got my ISA stocks and shares. Obviously, Mark, we talk about this all the time. I'm putting as much money into that as I can. Building up my classic motorcycle and car collection, that's something I really love, I'm passionate about. I want to build that up. But what else can I do? Rob, Mark, help me out.
I'd go and get a Vanguard tracker. Sort of life cycle, maybe 100, 180, 100.
I got it at my 100 at the moment. Yeah.
You could buy other trackers. I mean, you could buy individual shares, and sometimes they'll be good, sometimes they won't.
I do
10, 20 grand every now and again. But, I think you could do a lot worse than just put it in trackers.
It's not sexy, though, is it?
It's not sexy, but do you want the highest return over time or not?
Do you want sexy or do you want money?
I want money.
You definitely want to get yourself a buy-to-let and start building up a little bit of a portfolio. Keep it quite local to you. So, between where you live and where you work, keep it there.
You're going to make more out of that than the tracker.
And you've got a couple of guys who can help you.
And if I'd realised that was available as an investment, I would have said that, because you'll make more out of that than you will the tracker, definitely.
And when you
put a bit of time in,
when you build a portfolio as well, you get a really good lessons. I became an entrepreneur really thanks to property, dealing with tenants and dealing with brokers and solicitors and everything else. You get some good, well-rounded knowledge. So I definitely start with one little local buy-to-let. Keep it cheap, keep it local. One where there's a big market, where 90% of the town are rentable to. I'd definitely do that. I love watches, and we talk about these all the time, and I know you're getting an interest, but I'll definitely start learning about watches or some kind of physical asset that you're passionate about. Mark he's quite interested in wine. He's way more knowledgeable than me on that. So
I love cars and motorcycles.
So if you love cars and motorcycles, then the thing with cars and motorcycles, you've got to remember, and I'm not delusional to this, yes, we bought that Testarossa. Yes, we hoped it would be an investment. Yes, it probably will be. But it has maintenance every year, insurance every year, and it has sort of cycles of going up. So we've probably not made any money out of it yet. And I've just bought this 1989 911 Turbo. I'm going to have to own that a long time to make money out of it. And if you crash that, and then insurance and maintenance, and at the moment, the Ferrari's in bits, the Atom was in bits for months. We've had times when the Aventador, the Atom...
If you love to travel like me and you understand the power in escaping the money for time exchange trap, but you just don't know how to do it, then building an Airbnb consultancy business could be exactly what you have been looking for. Right now in the UK, there is a completely untapped opportunity through helping struggling Airbnb hosts by turning around their underperforming properties and generating you huge commission payments in the process. We are going to teach you all of the tools and all of the techniques that we've learned over the last 5 years through building our very own multiple six-figure Airbnb business, arming you with everything that you need to swoop in and save the day. Minimal startup costs, zero risk, and almost unlimited potential. Sound good? Welcome to the Airbnb Consultant. Contact us through any of the channels included in the studio notes to get the conversation started.
And the Testarossa are in bits. The only car that's never in bits is Mark's one, because Mark buys sensibly. Although my Panamera Turbo S has been like plug and play.
Yeah, because it's a modern Porsche. I mean, it's great.
What you've got to be careful of, Harry, because Mark said we're a bit bloated in property, we're overexposed. What he means is, as a percentage of our wealth, we've got a high percentage of property, so there's risk there. If you've got loads of classic cars and motorbikes, they're going to cost you a lot of money in insurance and maintenance. You nearly freaking killed yourself. I told you to never ride a motorcycle again. You ignored me. So you need to diversify a bit, mate. So I don't
know if you're going to hurt you again.
I don't know if you're interested in watches. Start with some Amigos watches. get up into your early model Rolexes and move up to Daytonas. Get some gold, mate. Get, you know, every now and again when you've got a bit of spare, get a Krugerrand, lock it away.
Get, actually, Britannia coins, I don't think there's any capital gains tax on them because they're currency. So I find
so Krugerrands there is there?
Yeah.
There's no capital gains tax on classic cars or watches.
No,
so
and I, yeah, because Britannia coins are
right. And they're a bit cheaper, aren't they, than Krugers?
I think they're still a troy ounce, but oh. they yeah,
you can get smaller.
They're legal tender.
Coins.
Yeah. So right. yeah, yes. there's no CGT.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there you go. Maybe Britannia yeah. coins yeah. are better than Krugerrands. Yeah, and you know, look, get entrepreneurial like you are. You know, you've got a cut in the revenue share of all the content. So
do indeed.
I think you're doing great. I just think don't get too exposed in one class. And you know, Mark sometimes worries because we've got a lot of property now. And you know, some there are some very powerful people who've lent money to us. And the rules which you have to adhere to, get yourself some other classes.
Cool. Good advice. Thanks, guys. So you've been in business together 17 years.
Wow.
That's longer than most marriages. So what's the secret?
I think you've got to have sort of, you know, be good at different things. So you've got your area. If Rob sort of, you know, there's a decision to make in Rob's area, or I just sort of stand back and he, even if I don't agree with his decision, he makes it, and vice versa. He's good enough to sort of let me make decisions in my areas, and he sort of stands back. I think in addition to that, you've just got to be really sort of, I don't know, you've not got to sweat the small stuff, and you've just got to see your sort of relationship as a very much a long-term thing, and not be too, Rob's probably more giving than I am, you know, which is, I think, a great trait in him. And, you know, you've got to be, when there's an issue or you think the other one's done something wrong or whatever.
It's not really
yeah.
Right, well, it would be both of us. You've not got to sweat it too much, and you've just got to sort of let it ride over you.
It was very nice of Mark to say I'm more giving than him, but he is more careful than I, and so therefore he helps me in a lot of things which I'm rubbish at. Insurances, managing expenses, cost controls, etc. He's really good at. So I'd echo what Mark said. You've got to be good at different things. I was coaching one of our clients yesterday, and there's two of them. They're related. And one of them's been out of the business for 2 years, and actually the business has improved, and he wants to get back in. And the other one's saying, no, it's improved. And you piss me off when you come back into the business. We end up doing the same thing. Go and do something else. So you should do different things, not the same thing. That's definitely one. I think what a lot of people do in partnerships is they look at what the other person is doing. And, oh, you should be doing more. You're not doing the right thing. But look at what you're doing. Focus on being great at you. And they'll be great at them. I definitely agree with not sweating the small stuff, because it's big stuff and small stuff, and life can just chuck you a load of small stuff that's not important. So try not to sweat that. Have a very long-term vision. Be in a business that you're passionate about, but have a very long-term vision, because property, the longer you're in it, the more money you make. And it's quite cool. We have this little hack, right, that no one else does that I know, but we share cars.
Yeah.
And we've got, like, with this Porsche coming now, I think that's 6 or 7. If you put the wife's Range Rovers in it, that's like 7 cars. It might be 8 when I looked at that Aston Martin, it won't. But we might get that 911, the one that we looked at yesterday.
Is that the DB9?
No, the V8 Vantage 1985.
Oh, the same one from Tom Hartley, the one in yellow.
Yeah, no, not that bonker. One. It's better than that, I'll show you.
Oh, they are
anyway,
gorgeous, mate.
We're looking at the 911 turbos, but we share the cars. So it's half the cost. And also, it's great having an Aventador, but it's a bit of a pain in the ass. And just as it's pissing you off, Mark gets it. And he has it, and he's like, I haven't had this for a few weeks. This is great. And as soon as it's pissing him off, it comes back to me. Because Mark knows what I'm like, and if it were me, I'd be buying and selling cars every 6 to 12 months because it bored them. But we've built up this little collection. So sharing things, you know, we don't do it yet really with watches, but we help each other with, Mark helps me with property, I help with watches, but we should share watches, share stuff. Yeah. You know, share stuff.
So it's kind of like a marriage then?
Well, in many ways it is, yeah.
Yeah.
by design, or did it just happen?
Totally, I think random. It evolves, doesn't it? It evolves. Yeah.
I've not known any other business partnership, but I've not known any other business partnership like that. A lot of, you know, business partners, they're 50-50, but they're not sharing cars. They're not like what you guys are.
Also, they fuck each other over.
Yeah.
Like, I know someone at the moment, and they're two partners. They've been in business 15 years. They're just fucking each other over. You know, we all make mistakes and none of us are perfect, but just don't fuck each other over.
So why have you never fucked each other over?
Why would I fuck Mark over? Like, he's built all this. I'd be the biggest idiot ever. Also, who's going to insure my cars? Who's going to look after my expenses? Who's going to advise me on stocks? Why would I want to fuck Mark over? Like, I don't really have it in me. I make mistakes, but I don't really have it in me to fuck someone over. But like, I like the fact that most of the time, I do good in business and make good money. And I like giving him half. It's like making money on your own with no one to share it with, it's not really that exciting. I'd rather make double and give half away.
Mm. So when you
why
got...
haven't you fucked me over? You're not that what? Sort of person.
No, why would you do that? Yeah. I mean, it just, but you know, you're creating value together and you're both contributing. Why would you want to destroy a load of value, destroy a relationship that you've built? You know, the longer the relationship you've had, the more you've sort of gained together, so you've got even more to lose. It doesn't help your wealth, it doesn't help your happiness, it does if you're in business with somebody you don't like and somebody who's an idiot and somebody who's robbing from you, but we haven't got that problem. So it's completely counterproductive in every way.
Also, if something went wrong and lawyers got involved, I mean, both of us don't really like lawyers.
They just take millions. Yeah. And we get
fucked. Wind us up.
We just get fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you guys started back in the day, what, you were 26, 27, something like that? And now...
25 and 20.
Yeah, I've got a year
on.
Oh,
yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, so I was 26, yeah. You were 27, yeah.
I just turned... Yeah. I was 26, just turning 27.
So you're in your late 20s, mid-20s, and now you are... experienced, battle-hardened veterans. You've lived and invested and built businesses through crashes, you know, and everything what we have right now. And when we were talking about recession, inflation, interest rates, it didn't really seem to bother you guys. Are you at a point now where you're so experienced, you kind of just roll with it and nothing cripples you?
Well, it's quite, you know, I used to get more worried than I do now. I mean, clearly during lockdown, when the training business got shut down and all the staff got sent home, that was, you know, that was a majorly worrying time. But, you know, as I saw all the warnings of inflation and interest rates going up, I sort of thought, well, I've seen all this before. You know, we were there in 08 when the banks stopped lending, seen all that before. You know, yes, energy bills started going up. We haven't had that before, but you know, I sort of thought, well, we can weather it. What's the worst case scenario? I sort of do a big quick fag packet. We can weather that. Once you've seen, or the more you've seen, the more you've been in business, the more recessions, the more bad stuff you've seen, the less it affects you when it comes along, because you realise that usually it's not as bad as the media make out, or as bad as the predictions, because of course they need to make it look bad to sell newspapers, or whoever's writing a report needs to get you to read it, so they make it look worse to justify the fee. But in addition, you know, over time, when one thing gets worse, one door closes, usually another opens. You know, in the 08 recession, banks stopped lending. You know, property values dropped 30%. The positive side was there were deals galore. You know, you could go out, you could buy stuff, you could make money out of developing it into something else. You get huge uplift like that. You know, and the yields were much, much higher once we went into the recession. You know, this time during the pandemic, there are, you know, lots of sort of negatives, but rents are absolutely soaring. Mm. You know, so the cash flow is not necessarily going up, but it's being protected. As interest rates go up, rents are reacting, they're going up hugely. And actually, I sent Rob some accounts yesterday in one of our property companies. We're still making what we were 3-4 years ago, when interest rates were so much lower and gas and electric was so much lower, because rents are going up, because, all right, we put another building in the mix, a smaller building, but you know, we've made sure we've kept pace with you know, rent rises, and also just bearing down on the cost, the other costs in that business. So you know, over time you realise you can manage most things as long as you've got capital and sort of room to move. You don't want to be over leveraged and, you know, have problems like that either.
I've never been a real worrier. I'm a bit of an optimist. I get really excited about things. I'm a bit of a dreamer. And I think that was good to start. And business can harden you to the point where you become skeptical of everything. And certainly now I'm a lot more skeptical of stuff. But I still try and maintain that if you're an entrepreneur, you can handle whatever comes your way. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to go bust. You're going to start again. And you're going to be even more motivated to start again. You're going to build something bigger. And then you're going to tell a story of how you went bust. Because, by the way, people go on podcasts and, yeah, I went bust two or three times. Like, it's a victory. So I just feel like the experience has given me the sense that, I wouldn't say, you can never say you're invincible, but you can handle what happens. No matter what happens, you'll be all right and you can handle it. And I worry even less, and I believe in myself even more that I can handle what's thrown at me, because loads of shit has been thrown at me.
Kind of your experience was almost like the weather during this podcast. Like, it's raining, it's gloomy, it's cold, and then the sun's out. And
it's great
just
now.
It's all good now, yeah.
I've never done a podcast in the rain.
No, it's the first, isn't it? Yeah. Mark, how big is the portfolio now?
So portfolio value is nearly 40 million. I think we've got 360 tenant, well, 370 something now.
Point out some of the buildings, because we've got all around us right
so
here.
So we've got 159 tenancies in this building, about 250 people living in this building.
And this is Aspect?
This is Aspect, worth about 19 million. Then we've got another building over there, which is Scape. That's got, I think, just under 50 tenants in there, and a commercial on the ground floor. So there's a sort of big, sort of the City College are in there. They're running their training out of there. Actually, there's commercial under here as well. There's a supermarket under here, and an estate agency. Over that side, we've got another building with, I think, 40 tenants in it.
That's City Club?
So sort of similar-ish value to that one, maybe 3.5 million, maybe that's worth more like 4. And then there's another building just the other side of it, which is 18 tenants, so smaller.
We also have a property management company, don't we, with 1,250 tenants?
Over 1,300 now, tenants that are being managed.
Nice.
Over 10 staff in the office running that, and they manage all these buildings and a load of others. 1,300 different tenants there.
There's all the buy-to-lets as well.
Yeah, there's houses. There's loads of. We've got a lot of other landlords in that letting agency as well, and they manage their properties as well.
Honestly, like, what is it like stood on top of your biggest ever deal, overlooking your empire, 17 years ago as 25, 26 year olds? Could you have really imagined this? This is a literal empire, this is legacy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I didn't imagine this. I didn't think we'd have these in the town centre and sort of built them all, converted them all. This one we actually built ourselves. This was built in-house by Progressive. We have, you know, Progressive Building Company, so I never imagined that would happen.
You don't seem that fazed, Mark.
I don't know, it's sort of happened now, hasn't it?
It's taller than Andreas' building.
Andreas Pignotti.
Someone who we know. Our building is taller than his.
How's that make you feel, Rob? This is an empire.
Yeah, I suppose it is an empire. I'm never really one for resting on my laurels. So.
You don't think this is fucking amazing?
I think there's more work to do, Harry. We've got more work to do. What, we're going to stop now?
I didn't say stuff, I just said to take it in.
Yeah, I mean, this building that Mark has developed almost with his bare hands, with the shit we had to go through, to see it, it is a huge beast. And so, yeah, it is, yeah, it's a beast. But you know what? We're still young. So we've still got a lot more to do. I'm not up for retirement. Mark might be a bit closer than me, but I'm not up for retirement.
I'm not up for retirement. I'm just up for paying less tax.
Mark is a legend at working things like that out, but he's been very busy with these projects.
Not now, but, you know, when I'm in my 50s, you know, and you know, Freddie's a little bit older and, you know, got the ability, I just would love to be able to just stick it to them and pay clear off, go somewhere and pay no income tax. And you know, there's a big part of me that just feels completely raped. Yeah.
Yeah, Harry. Look, I've never been really one for sitting back and smelling the roses. Maybe I should. I find it difficult. You know, as an entrepreneur, you're on to the next thing. You've got to be on to the next thing.
But how is this not a wonderful achievement? You own that building there, several buildings there, hundreds of buy-to-lets, this building right here. This is an empire. This is legacy,
yeah, I
isn't
suppose
it?
Two lads from Peterborough is pretty...
Yeah.
I don't think there's any... Well, I get recognised a lot everywhere I go now because of the brand, and I get recognised even more here, and I don't think there's
many famous
people from Peterborough. So, yeah, I suppose we've done something pretty cool.
You're subduing it. You're not really selling it.
Well, there's nothing to sell. It's just...
It's a great achievement. How is it not?
It's normal.
1,300 tenants.
Yeah.
Hundreds of properties.
Yeah.
Just two dudes started a company a few years ago.
Well, I mean, we've got, I worked out in the office and outsourcers, and this might be more now, 145 staff. That's an achievement. Keep them all in a job. That's definitely a big achievement as well. You are?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah.
Okay, right, final question, and then we're going to move on to the quickfire and cheeky round. Rob, you've been podcasting 7 years, yeah. Over 7 years.
Happy birthday to us. 7 years, yeah.
Tell me some notable moments, and what's that been like for you?
Well, I only started my podcast because I like to jump in on the new trend that could be big. I'm not just a flighty magpie chasing anything shiny, but if I can see an opportunity, I jump in, and I'd listen to Joe Rogan and Tim Ferriss and people like that who were like, whoa, these guys have come out of nowhere and done massive podcasts, I should be doing it. And I think we've interviewed, about 20 billionaires now?
Probably more,
interviewing a billionaire. We've obviously interviewed some really controversial people like Andrew Tate and Katie Hopkins. We interviewed Floyd Mayweather twice, Caitlyn Jenner, Jordan Peterson. So it's been a lot of fun. We've got Eddie Hall next week.
Can't wait, that'll be awesome, yeah.
He's a big lad, isn't he?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been great. And Harry, as I told you, I started maybe 2 years ago saying to you, it's not just about the quality of the content that's important, the guests, it's about the experience. So we're on the roof of a massive development here in the rain doing a podcast, and they'll create a memory there. You know, I interviewed Chris Eubank, which was a weird thing, and we created memories there. So for me now, it's about creating memories and not just trying to create great content, which is the most important, and not just trying to grow the brand, which is obviously important.
And Mark, you've been podcasting almost as long now. Any notable moments, and do you still enjoy podcasting now to when you started it 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, there's been loads of notable moments, hasn't there? I mean, in this building, a lot of them blowing around. And
let's shout out Mark's podcast. What's it called?
Yeah, it's Mark My Words. Yeah.
Mark Homer, go check that out.
Yeah, Quentin Wilson
was
pretty
awesome,
cool.
Yeah. Nigel Farage.
Best, yeah, Nigel Farage. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Still doing the episodes. You sort of have to nudge me every now and then.
People love your hacks as well. Your most popular episodes are often like,
yeah, people
how
love
to
it.
Hack the air miles, yeah. How to hack the insurance. Yeah.
Yeah, the air miles is always good. I mean, I still love all that. It's just my favorite. It's almost like, I don't know, a bit of it, I must admit, is maybe not productive, but it feeds this thing inside me, which is just like I'm, what is it, swapping a fiver for a tenner,
yeah.
That kind of stuff. It's just getting something for nothing, you know. Yeah. Champagne lifestyle, lemonade wages. There's something beautiful about it. Yeah.
Do you ever get competitive between each other when, like, you interview someone and, like, you got more views? Compared to when you interviewed each other, is there anything like that going on between you two?
It's very, very rare because we like different stuff, which is sort of what works. I do remember when I interviewed Nigel Farage. I think I got more people.
You might
views on that one than Rob's.
We were under shadow ban at the time.
And I think Rob had something to say, something along those lines about it.
Who introduced you to Nigel Farage?
But do you get jealous because he's interviewed Andrew Tate or someone like that, and you haven't? No,
I don't want to go anywhere near him. I find it interesting, and I'm happy for Rob, but the people like that aren't for me. Yeah.
The thing is, we're not really competitive because Mark wins when I win, and I win when Mark wins. So it's not really any competitive. In fact, I can't really think of anything. And you know, when Mark got his big views on Nigel, I was happy. And I knew we were in a shadow ban. So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, a bad workman always blames his tools.
I'll let Mark do that one.
Cool. Right. Should we do a quick fire, gentlemen?
Whatever you want. Yeah.
Super quick fire, as quick as you can answer these questions, basically. Right, you've been in business together 17 years. Give me 17 quick fire lessons you've learned in 17 years in business.
Don't sweat the small stuff.
I'll do the counting.
Don't eat yellow snow. No. Play the long game. So the Chinese, as much as we hate them, they put a 30-year plan together. Mm. Play the long game.
Get good at sales and marketing.
Right. Be very good at cost control.
Oh.
Always reinvest to grow your businesses. Don't just strip all the money out.
Have one eye on the next market and how you're going to have to flex and change your business to react to the new world.
Develop a lot of partnerships, relationships, joint ventures and business friendships.
Make sure that when you find people that you are going to go into business with or do stuff with, you test drive them first.
Hire really good people, especially your senior team, and never lose good people from your organisation. Mm.
Use things like tax or high inflation to your advantage. Go and borrow on big buildings. 10% inflation means your debt's being paid down by 10% per annum. Inflation has an inverse effect on debt. So use these things to your advantage.
Build your digital assets as well as your physical assets, like your personal brand, like social media, like podcasts, like YouTube, as well as the traditional stuff like property and business.
Back to the theme I mentioned a minute ago, if tax is high, use that as the tonic to make you really focus on utilising every single relief and every single little thing that the government does give you, because we don't all use all our reliefs every year. And surely this is a reason to do that.
Five more.
Don't forget that business is supposed to be fun and life is short, so don't be too busy hustling that you don't enjoy the journey.
Make sure you bring other people on your journey with you who have helped you, or your family, or you know, maybe others in business, because it's great having friends and sort of being able to look back and having done things together. Having great relationships along the way.
You cannot master what you do not measure, so test and track every data point in your business.
If you haven't got a sheet of paper or some other evidence, or you can't see that something has been done, it's not been done. So make sure that whenever you task someone with something, that they send you the report, or you get the spreadsheet, or you know, you can see the thing they built, because you can usually assume if you can't see it, but you haven't been sent it, my attitude is it's not been done.
One more.
Invest in property. And if you're a business owner, invest in your own property. Like, for example, we have our own offices and our own training facilities, which have been saved loads of money on hotels. We own the buildings, so you could be smart with the rents and the leases. So invest in and own your own property.
Smashed it. Amazing. What are some of the biggest bullshit buzzwords and phrases you've learned in 17 years doing business that is just plain wrong?
It's easy. You can just set this business up and make money while you sleep.
Work from home.
It's a recent one.
Oh, you can just do it all hands free.
What do you think about the product sells itself and the customer is always right?
I think the product doesn't sell itself. You have to go and bloody sell it, unless you're Steve Jobs and Apple, but that took him a lot of years to build up. I don't think the customer is always right.
That's just horseshit.
I think sometimes the customer's wrong and you need to tell them. I think sometimes you need to fire your customer. And in some industries, there's too much consumer power.
Have you ever gone into business with someone who just turned out to be a rat piece of shit?
Yeah, there's loads of them. Of course, there's plenty of them.
And how do you deal with that situation?
Oh, you just get rid of them out of your sphere as quickly as possible. Sometimes you have to manage them out. You know, I've had this with builders in the past. one in particular, and you sort of manage them out over a period of time. That's usually the way to do it.
We've had a lot of partnerships. We have trainers in our training business, we have contractors, etc. So we've had a lot because we've had a lot of partnerships. I'm kind of immune to that now. I just accept it as part of the journey. In fact, we've probably trained up a third to a half of the competition in our own industry. I'm not going to mention any names, but yeah, we've had partners who have either been good and then just gone wildly crazy. I can think of one in particular. Or we've had partners that just came in just to rape us for everything and made out they were tickling our testicles while having one finger up our ass. I can think of one.
One individual in particular. Yeah.
But that will not be named. So we don't want to give them airtime, Harry.
Could you have achieved what you have without each other?
No, I couldn't. Mark probably could.
Absolutely not, no. Why? Definitely not, no.
Why?
Because the sum of the pieces is greater than the individual components. One plus one equals five. You know, Rob's got a load of stuff that I'm not. I'm got a load of stuff that he isn't. And when you put that together, you end up with a much greater thing. So I would never have been able to.
If you think about a business, there's two main elements of the financials. There's increasing the revenue and controlling the costs. Mark's brilliant at controlling the costs, and I'm pretty good at increasing the revenue. If it were just me, I'd be increasing the revenue and I'd probably be losing the margin. And if it were Mark, he'd have such a tight control on the costs, it might not grow as fast. So from a cash and growth perspective, that's a great... Mark finds things and slashes costs, which I'm like, wow, how did you even know that that was a thing? It's hard to do both. The last few months, through choice, I've got involved in a lot of cost control and renegotiating on contracts and creating new agreements and looking at commission splits and stuff. And I've taught myself it and learned to enjoy it, but it's against my flow and it probably stops me from making money because you can't do both. You can't make and save at the same time.
What's been your worst financial mistake in the past 17 years?
Well, the most costly thing was the lockdown. That wasn't a choice or a decision. Rob might say we should just have carried on and ignored all the regulations. But that's been by far the most costly thing that I can think of in our business career together.
It's not what you should say, because when you're asked what's your biggest financial mistake, you should say about this big risk you took, or you lost millions, or you went bust, yeah. But actually, we've never gone bust, never really lost any major money. Any mistake we've made has been small and de-risked. I'm not saying that protects us from the future, but I would probably say, looking back, maybe we've just been ever so slightly too cautious. And I know when I have been the most bold, it has been the best for the business, but it's also caused the most chaos and carnage around me. So I would say my biggest financial mistake is not being bold enough. I'm going to change that.
Are you sure it's not that Mercedes SL you bought?
No, you bought it, mate.
Did you pick it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Harry, you didn't tell me that.
I didn't.
It was my money, or our money. Do you really want to do this on the show, Harry?
Who's Batman, who's Robin?
Well, Rob's taller than me, so I suppose he's Batman.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah.
I'm Batman, Mark's Robin.
Okay, what one song or movie best describes your partnership?
Bad Boys? We get in the car.
Yeah.
Or almost the car.
Great, I can't.
We'll go with Bad Boys, that's a good answer.
Bad Boys.
For both of you, who's your dream interview to get on your podcasts?
Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Like in every way, that would just be wild, and that's what you need nowadays. I mean, it's not my favourite person in the world to... I'd love Arnold Schwarzenegger on a personal level.
Fuck, yeah.
Sam Zell.
He's a huge real estate mogul from the US, and he's made billions and billions and billions and out of buying buildings. I don't know anyone bigger in terms of buying assets like these.
Cool. Right. Cheeky round, super quick fire, last 10 minutes, and we can be wrapped up. I'll start with Mark first. Mark, what's the worst thing about Rob?
What's the worst? Chaos, sometimes.
Rob, what's the worst thing about Mark?
Sometimes he's grumpy when he hasn't slept.
That hasn't happened for a while. Because my stress levels have reduced, haven't they?
It is true.
When was the last time? I've been managing it better.
It is true. I only said it because I was directly asked it. I would never raise it otherwise.
It's true. But you know what? I'm better at managing it because I'm better at not getting in such stress situations more recently.
And Rob, what's the best thing about Mark?
Best thing about Mark is his attention to detail. And people don't actually know this about Mark, so I'm going to just say it. But when we started, I didn't have any money. I was broke. And we used to go out and get on the town and have some drinks and see if we could get some girls. And Mark would always pay for me. And sort of, he brought more when we started when I was a bit behind. So I think anyone who knows Mark would know him for his cost control and he loves to save. But I think he's underestimated in his generosity.
And Mark, what's the best thing about Rob?
The best thing about Rob is his never-ending vision and sort of positivity, which carries us along. It pushes us into new things. It makes us take more risk, which you need to do to be, you know, to go into new areas and be more profitable and grow your business, which is a major benefit to all of us.
Mark, what's the stupidest thing Rob's done in the past 17 years?
Fucking hell, how long you got?
just one of the many.
Well, there's one you can't say.
Oh, God. Well, that is it, yeah. I just forgotten about that.
Can't be said.
Maybe for the edit, you say about one of Rob's many car crashes. Or...
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
The car crashes, though, we've fucking all done that, haven't we? You know, and that's just, I don't know. I'll just say the Ferrari, because fucking, yeah. Yeah.
105 grand repair bill, was it?
Yeah. Like yeah, Rob managed to send a week-old Ferrari 458. When he was going around a bend, he managed to leave the road and place the car in a car park down a ravine right next to the News of the World Finance Centre.
Impressive.
Which generated two photographers on our doorstep by lunchtime.
Proud of yourself, Rob?
Well, if you're going to do something, do it in style.
Yeah.
Although I did consult Mark when the journalists were at the door. Should I say anything or not? Should I be interviewed by them? I was like, yeah, go for it.
That was Gemma, that was. Oh, yeah, go. She went out there, didn't she? Yeah. Winding them up. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll do.
Yeah.
And Mark, Rob, what's the stupidest thing Mark's ever done? I don't suppose he's really done many stupid things.
No, there is stuff. No,
Mark's not.
There is.
He's not stupid. He doesn't do stupid things. I don't think I can think of any.
Trusting those Irish builders.
Yeah, but the thing is, you did a load of due diligence.
Yeah, it worked in the end.
Yeah.
300 grand. The
thing is, I don't think that's stupid. Yeah. I don't look at... You know, you could say the same about me in that, oh, well, I brought in a stupid partner.
Yeah.
So you could say the same thing, but how do you know unless you actually do it?
Oh, well, a stupid training, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's a similar thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it is. Yeah. But you've got to take the rough with the smooth, haven't you? Sort of... They're daft, but that makes them good in another way, doesn't it? Yeah.
Sometimes Mark's rude. It's going to be rude to like people in restaurants or one thing I will say,
I'm not rude, waiters and waitresses are always polite.
I've definitely seen you've been rude and wag that finger. Oh yeah,
quite in recent
you're nowhere near as bad as my dad, No, not really in recent times. I think I have a feeling, Mark, that the lockdown and some other things that have happened in life have probably made you a bit more relaxed and enjoying life a bit more.
I think
that's really important.
Creates perspective.
Yeah. You know, you're doing more of your flying and...
Got rated on that turbine, R66.
Yeah, exactly.
Helicopter, yeah.
And, you know, we started flying together. That was one thing we used to do together. Mark kept it on. To me, it's too much of a faff. But he doesn't do stupid things.
I redeemed that 300 grand by driving around their houses the next day, getting them on site, and I know we saved that by building ourselves.
And actually, sometimes the things you do that are the biggest mistakes...
You've got to turn them into a positive.
You redeem them and you sort it out and you become better.
Greta Thunberg, Jeremy Corbyn, Diane Abbott. You've got to marry one, fuck one, kill one. Go.
Marry one, fuck one, kill one.
God, well, you got to kill Jeremy Corbyn because
he's heterosexual.
and he's also just such a nightmare. You know, he would create more carnage, more destruction to this country than either of those three.
I'd marry Greta because she's younger.
Yeah, me too.
Really? You would marry Greta?
We'd have to.
I'd kill Greta.
Oh, versus Diane Abbott? Oh, but you'd have sex with one of them?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Imagine Diane Abbott in here. Oh, my God.
That's why you'd fuck her, because then you could just get rid.
Oh,
just once.
God.
Where did this question come from?
My head.
Your head, yeah. Your sadistic head.
God.
I would kill Greta Thunberg.
No, you marry her.
Oh, no, then I've got to fuck Corbyn. No, fuck this all up. Yeah.
No, you marry Thunberg.
No.
You kill Corbyn, and you fuck Abbott. It's an easy answer.
Yeah, Rob's got a point there. I mean, we shouldn't be going down this road, but if you had to do that, then...
I would just like to make a disclaimer.
You'd have to have Greta in your ear, though. But
she's
just
a lot younger. She can look after you when you're old.
She'd just be talking about climate change, which, some of what she says might be true, but the rest of it... I mean, you'd probably drive an electric car home and then you'd have a garage down the road with all your real stuff in it, so you could sort of deal with that. Would she be that? Yeah, she'd be annoying. She'd be really annoying. But then Diane Abbott would be even more annoying. Imagine the nonsense she'd be coming out with. God. You know, and the...
Mark doesn't suffer fools gladly.
The faulty rubbish she'd be coming out with. You know, sort of, you'd be there, I don't know, working out what you just spent at the supermarket, and she'd be like, yeah, but three plus three is nine, you know what I mean? It would just be constant nonsense, wouldn't it? Oh, God. Yeah.
Ferrari, Lambo or Porsche?
Oh, for what purpose? Well, Porsche.
You can only have one set of cars. Yeah.
Yeah, Porsche. Why? If you can only have one, it's Porsche.
Why?
Because you... out of all three, you probably drive it the quickest. You can use it every day so easily, and it's the least hassle. Out of the three, if you've got to live with just one, that's what I do.
Lambo for looks, Ferrari for prestige, and Porsche for actual overall usability.
If you could only have one.
Now, I would have said Ferrari when I was 27, Lambo when I was 35, and as I'm getting old, I'm actually going to say Porsche, because you can have a GT3, which looks outrageous, and you can properly do things with that. And then you can have a Panamera Turbo S for your daily, and you can have the Cayenne Turbo S for your wife, and you can have the 911 Turbo S for a daily racer. They just do everything. I used to think they were really boring, but that's probably a reflection of my own chaotic personality, but they do everything good.
I would agree with you.
But Lamborghinis are sexy, though. Nothing looks
Porsches
as
aren't.
Good as a Lamborghini. No, Porsches are great, but nothing looks as good as a Lamborghini.
Lamborghinis look great, but I mean, I'd have a Ferrari over a Lamborghini generally, because, you know, I think loads of Ferraris look amazing, sound amazing, you know, and are usually almost as sexy, but Rob's right. On the really, really latest, you know, the new stuff, Lamborghinis sound way better because they're still not naturally aspirated and they've not got these horrible particulate filters on them. So the V10s, you know, the Huracan and the Aventadors, the V12s, they sound a lot better than, you know, say Ferrari 296. I think the 812 still sounds good though, the big Ferrari V12.
But, you know, Ferrari's a lot easier to live with than a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
A lot easier, I think.
Also, let's say you went with Porsche. You've got a Cayenne for people who like the 4x4. You got your Turbo S Panamera for your daily. You've got your 911 for your daily racing. You've got your GT2, GT3. So you can have all of these cars, and then, because you bought so many, you got loyalty with the dealership, and then when the limited editions come out, you get to buy them first, and then they go up in value.
You could also have the 918 Spider.
You could. Yeah, that, yeah.
That's more extreme than a Lamborghini.
Yeah. Two more questions, and we'll wrap up. Build your ultimate three-car garage. You can only have three cars to live with you for the rest of your life. What are they going to be?
911 Turbo S daily.
Definitely number one.
Which generation?
The latest.
992.
Change the exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
Cab. 992 Turbo S cab.
Yeah. So that does both. If you want to drive it, drive it. And if you're on the daily, daily it. And you've got the, yeah, you get the cabriolet for the roof. That's one.
Number two, I'd probably at the moment have a G-Wagon. I really like them.
I didn't, what? Yeah, I would not have thought you would have said, yeah.
I would never have called you a G-Wagon guy. Yeah. Have you just started selling drugs on the side as one of our new business models?
I'd probably get a diesel G-Wagon.
G-Wagon?
Just love them, yeah.
Really?
And
that's the most outrageous thing you've said in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know, the third one, you'd probably have to have a hypercar, wouldn't you? So, would I get another Aventador? Maybe not.
So the second one for me is easy, because it's just, out of the three classic cars that are my childhood dream cars, or growing up, Ferrari Testarossa got. Just bought the 911, 930 Turbo, almost a bad boys one, actually better than the bad boys one. And the third was the Ferrari F40. So you live now with two cars. So I'm going to take the Ferrari F40. It's just the...
Great choice.
Yeah, that's the second. And then third, it's going to have to be something fairly practical as well as...
A G-Wagon?
I'm normally a bit more of a bling, extreme taste than Mark.
I'm not talking about an AMG rooted up 63.
Rude.
I'm talking about the diesel,
yeah,
with sort of, you know, nice wheels, but not
trapped
up.
No. Yeah. This is a tough one, the third.
I'd buy a hypercar for the third one.
Which
so
one?
Yeah, maybe an F60.
Okay.
Maybe a
LaFerrari. Yeah.
Maybe
Chiron?
No, I don't
Koenigsegg,
think I
would. Agera?
No. I'd probably just go and get a LaFerrari Spider. Yeah.
I'm stuck on the third one, Harry.
Should I tell you mine?
Go on then.
My classic would be Jaguar XJS V12.
Yeah.
Supercar would be Lexus LFA,
yeah.
V10.
They do say, you're right about that. They
oh, the fucking outrageous.
Yeah.
And I would daily drive a V12 BMW 7 Series.
Yeah. I used to love
Rolls Royce in disguise.
Remember the James Bond with the long wheelbase?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, running it off his
iPhone.
E66, I believe.
Was it? Yeah. I used to love those.
Mm, yeah.
760 IL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the IL, yeah.
Yeah.
What is that Koenigsegg that's a four-seater? I've never driven it, but is it the Gamera? Is that called
I
that?
I believe so,
I'd like
yeah.
to have a go in that, because if that could do as a hypercar, but it's got four seats, I might choose that.
Love it. Final question. What does the next 17 years have in store for both of you?
More of the same. So our businesses will look different because they'll have to evolve because opportunities and the market will evolve. I suspect our property, I'd like to believe that our property portfolio will be quite a bit bigger. I don't want to push the debt up on it. I just like the debt to sit around the sort of 50% level.
I would say, our training business is either 100 million plus or we've sold it. Our personal brand and all of our online content, social media agency and everything else is 50 million plus. And there's no doubt we'll be doing two or three new sexy things that I've got really interested in that we couldn't predict. definitely want to keep growing Rob.team. Maybe we have 100,000 members of Rob.team by then. But the law of compounding, you're always told how powerful it is. And when you start, you don't see the power of it. The longer you've been doing it, you see the power of it. And I remember Mark used to say, oh, properties won't double in the 10 or 15 years like they said. And they did. And as it compounds, that just gets, because, you know, 100 becomes 200, but then 400, then 800, then 1.6, then 3.2. And we're at the stage now where doubling is 100 million, and doubling that is 200 million, and doubling that is 400 million. So that's why Mark said the same thing, but more, because you want to let compounding really kick in.
Rob, Mark, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Harry.
Thanks, Harry.